Hi everyone, welcome to the True Crime Podcast where we focus on San Diego cases. My name is Arena.
I'm Renette. Hi Arena.
Hi Renette, what's going on? It's been a while.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I know I canceled
recording. No, me too. I was supposed to do one.
That's right. Hey, so then this is your fault.
I blame on you. Sorry. But we got to hang out, which was nice.
Yeah, I was so glad. It's been way too long.
I know. It was fun. I had so much fun. And I like the new places that you showed me.
Yeah.
That new little place.
Yeah, also my friend's bar is going to be opening up. I think I had texted you. I've been kind of like going in and checking the progress.
Yeah, when is it opening?
Well, originally they were going to have their soft opening this Sunday, but or this Saturday, invite only. But the ice maker is having trouble connecting, and there was one other thing, so they pushed that off. But it's almost there, and when it opens up, it's going to be so fucking cute. Like, the sound system is amazing. The decor is really cool. Records everywhere. Really cool flooring, like this black, shiny flooring with like glitter sprinkled in.
What's it called again?
Tender Hooligan.
Tender Hooligan?
Yeah, so they're going to have like goth nights. They're going to have ska and reggae.
Nice.
Like, I think even oldies, they're just going to have a variety of stuff. They're going to serve like sake, soju, mixed drinks.
Nice. Also, no liquor, like hard liquor yet?
No, there is. There is going to be hard liquor.
Okay.
So, and then sandwiches, rice bowls, coffee.
Ooh.
So, and then Virginio's wife, Heather, she's a coffee snob. And so, and she's had several years of working as a barista.
Oh, okay.
So really nice. Cute. So that's exciting. And then what else is going to – I don't know why I wanted to ask you. Did you watch the live streaming from Coachella this weekend at all?
No, I didn't watch any of it.
No? I didn't either. I mean, not actually live, but I did watch the next day. I think No Doubt performed on Saturday. And then my ex-husband, George, his sister, Lulu, that I'm still pretty close to. She's, like, amazing. She had shared with me, like, No Doubt's performance because I took her to her first concert when she was 13, and it was No Doubt. I got her into punk and ska growing up. So, yeah, it was really cool to watch.
Nice. Cute.
So, yeah. Anyway, should we get started?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. This is going to be a San Diego case. And
hey.
I know it feels like it's been a while since we've done a local case, and it's the Donna Gentile case. Have you heard of that?
Donna Gentile. I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay. So Donna, she was born on August 22nd, 1962 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania to her parents, Ellen and Lewis. She was the youngest of two children. Her older brother, he was 2 years older than her. And growing up, Donna and her brother, they did witness their parents arguing quite a bit. Her parents were fairly young when they had started having their children. I think they were 18. And then when Donna was born, they were 20. And eventually her parents decided to divorce. And that was in 1971. So Donna was around 9 years old and her brother was 11. Donna went on to live with her mom after the divorce, and then Lewis went to go live with their father. And it's said that it was really rough on Donna because she was really close to her brother. He was like her, like he actually made her feel safe and loved because she never felt that from her parents. And so that, like, whole divorce and getting separated from her brother was, like, really rough for her.
Yeah, that actually sounds really, like, crappy because not only are the parents separating, but then, like, she's being separated from her close brother. Like, that's kind of messed up that they did that instead of having them, like, kind of sharing, going back and forth together, though.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like we did a case where it was something like that, unless I'm wrong, or it was some other podcast that I listened to where they did something similar. But yeah, I can imagine it. Divorce is already rough on children, so I can't even imagine getting separated from your siblings. But eventually when Donna was 15 years old, her mom, Ellen, she got remarried and they went on to live with Ellen's new husband. Donna said that soon after they moved in with her stepfather, he started to make inappropriate sexual advances at her.
No.
And so gross. Donna, she would go and tell her mom, but her mom, she didn't believe her.
No, poor Donna.
It's so infuriating when you hear stuff like that.
Yeah, what the hell?
So at that time, Donna started drinking and she began running away from home. And eventually when she hit 16, so, you know, like a year into it, finally she was placed into a home for delinquent girls. And she stayed there until March 1980. Until she was 17, 18 years old. And she decided to take a bus to San Diego, California.
She had all dreams. The way from Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Wow.
Sounds damn awful. Yeah.
It sounds like a long trip, but also she's brave. Like, mm-hmm. That's really, yeah,
17, 18.
Yeah, by so yourself.
She had dreams of doing something good in San Diego, and she wanted to create her life of happiness here. But when she gets here, you know, she has no money, no job. She doesn't have a place to live. And so she starts working as a sex worker. I mean, it was like fast cash, easy money. She was just trying to survive.
Yeah.
She started working on El Cajon Boulevard.
It's famous for that.
Exactly. I feel like everybody knows El Cajon Boulevard for that history, right?
Well, I used to live on there too, and I mean, they still have certain corners, and you can tell which ones are from San Diego and which ones are from LA, because there are some that are
really
from LA. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like a little, I don't want to say classier, but they're dressed nicer. Don't ask me how I know this. I literally talked to them. I was like, how? Oh, like.
Oh, you do just saying hi and making casual.
Okay. So when I lived on El Cajon Boulevard, like we would normally just walk because the bar near our place was like just maybe 5-6 blocks away.
Which bar was that? Just curious.
Space Bar.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah. And it used to be the Hideout, and there used to be Void. It used to be a lot of different names. And then sometimes there are like, you know, sex workers in the corners, and we'd randomly just be like, hi, or like, okay, oh, cute dress, blah, 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 whatever. And then I noticed that there were some that looked different, or I'd never like seen them before. And they're just like, oh yeah, we're here from LA just for like a week or two.
Oh, shit. Like,
okay. Yeah, I don't know.
Huh. I don't know why I would feel like LA, if you're doing sex work, there's a lot more options. Like, I feel like there's more people in LA, so it's like easier to make money, but then maybe the competition with other sex workers is
I think
harder.
That's why. Yeah, they're like, and they kind of get told where to go. So they're just like, yeah, we're just stationed here for like a week or two just to see like how it goes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. Wow.
You know, during that time, I ended up like started Googling and just trying to see in that year what El Cajon Boulevard was at that time. And there was a Los Angeles Times article, actually, where there was a local resident who was expressing their concern for how the neighborhood was being overrun by prostitutes. And there was pimps. There was a lot of drugs. And she said that she would see children getting dropped off by school buses at the same time that prostitutes were roaming the streets or were being dropped off by clients.
Oh my gosh. Everyone's just getting dropped off.
Yeah, dropped children off and sex workers and all. Yes. The community ended up having a town hall meeting to address the issue, which led to forming an anti-prostitution task force. And during that meeting, both residents and even the business owners, they talked about how awful the impact was of associating El Cajon Boulevard with prostitution on the local business community, which I can imagine. Like, you know, if you do own a business and you're trying to bring people, oh, shit, I don't want to go to that home remodeling place because it's on El Cajon Boulevard. Like,
And El Cajon
I mean,
Boulevard
I'd
is
still go, I'm
a,
just saying.
yeah, and that it's a really long street. Like, it's a pretty big known, a lot of businesses, a lot of schools, a lot of suburbs, like right down the street from it. So it's like, it's a pretty big street. It's hard to avoid.
It is.
Yeah.
So Donna, she met a San Diego police officer named Larry about a year after moving to San Diego. And that was in, let's see, February of 1981. And I'm not sure exactly how I met or how they met. I did read an article that said that that Donna was at a local 7-Eleven. And her friend were just chatting with the store clerk. And then Larry walked in on duty. He went in to get coffee and started making conversation with Donna and her friend. And then it said when they did meet, Larry asked her if she was ever interested in a career in law enforcement, to which Donna said yes. So he says that he would be more than happy to take her on a ride along. And so, in order for an officer to take someone on a ride along, the person riding would need to fill out a waiver form, and the officer would need to get permission from her or his superior. So Donna fills out the waiver form, and the ride along was scheduled for 3 days later. So they end up doing the ride along. They eventually take a break during that day to grab some food. They go to a Mexican restaurant called King Taco, and while they were eating, was that around at that time when you lived there?
I didn't know there was one in San Diego, but I know there's one in LA that's really famous. So maybe back
Okay.
then, I guess there was one here, yeah.
Yeah, so they go there to grab some food, and while they're in the restaurant eating tacos, some other police officers go in for lunch or dinner or whatever it was, and they see Larry with Donna. Well, then days later, Officer Larry Sargent calls Larry to tell him that a complaint was filed against him for going out and spending time with a known prostitute.
Uh-oh.
They did some investigating and they see that Donna was definitely a prostitute and that she was actually arrested 2 days prior to the ride along.
What?
And yeah, and so I guess like the first few times that Donna would get arrested for prostitution, she would spend a day or two in jail and then they would release her.
Yeah, okay.
Larry ended up receiving a warning for the incident because he told his superiors that he had no idea she was a prostitute. Although Donna did say that after she did the ride along with Larry, they went back to her apartment and they had consensual sex. At that time, he didn't pay her, but that
He
happened.
was like, I'll put it on your tab, Larry.
Yeah, but Arena, I feel like he probably knew, like that was
Oh,
the
he
area he
knew. Like,
controlled.
how do you not know? But like, I mean, if she didn't charge him though, maybe he was kind of naive. I don't know.
I don't know. So now, okay, so that happened. And then the info on Donna's activities from January 1982 to January 1984, they're pretty fuzzy. She wasn't arrested, at least like during those couple years. And it seems like she wasn't doing sex work at that time, because according to an article, Donna, she did that sex work for a year when she first got to San Diego. But eventually she landed a gig working as a security guard. And while working as a security guard, she started dating her supervisor and they were together for 2 years. So it seems
Oh,
like
okay.
during those 2 years, that's when she stopped.
Yeah.
But eventually that relationship ended. And then that's when she went back to prostitution.
Aw, that sucks.
And so between February and March 1984, so after she got out of that relationship, she was charged three different times for prostitution. She initially didn't plan on hiring a lawyer because she did get to know some of the police officers, because she thought that if she got friendly with the officers, they would provide her with protection and the dangerous, life of working on the streets.
Yeah.
And she did say a lot of them were nice to her in the beginning. So she thought, well, I don't need an attorney. My law enforcement friends are going to help out. but they did not help out. And that's when she decided to get legal representation. Mm-hmm. And at her arraignment, she pled not guilty to all three charges and she opted for a trial.
Okay.
Now, during her trial, Donna called out some police, San Diego police officers for sexual misconduct.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and one officer, Rosenblum, he took the stand and he gave an account about the undercover prostitution sting that ended up leading to Donna's arrest. And according to Officer Rosenblum, he made eye contact with Donna, and then she approached his car uninvited. He said that Donna got in, they drove around, and he claimed that Donna offered him sex, but he declined, and he dropped her off on El Cajon Boulevard, where his vice unit arrested her. So that was Rosenblum's story.
Okay.
But Donna's testimony, it was different. She said that after Rosenblum initiated eye contact with her, like he started that eye contact, she walked to his car and she asked him, "Don't I know you from 3 years ago?" And when the prosecutor asked Donna during cross-examination, you know, "What do you mean by that question?" Donna said that she thought she recognized Officer Rosenblum as someone she had dated 3 years earlier.
What?
Now, when they asked, well, define what does date mean, she defined it as having sex with someone in exchange for money.
Oh.
So, like, here's this officer she recognized as dating.
A previous client. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so Donna's testimony implied that mistaking a police officer for a customer, it was not uncommon at that time. Mm-hmm. Because according to her, and there was other sex workers who came forward at that time, it was a normal thing to be propositioned by police officers on duty and off.
Ooh.
So the trial convicted Donna of only one of the three charges, but she did still end up appealing that one conviction. And while awaiting trial, Donna ran into Officer Larry, that first officer she met when she first started. And let me see, that was in early of June 1984. Larry approached her for sex, you know, during that time. That's when he was working this San Diego police vice using unit prosecution crackdown, which that's so gross. Like, you know, police seeing these women as less than human and just like taking advantage of that.
Oh, yeah.
Using them and for sex.
The whole like, oh, who's going to believe you? Like, you know, you versus a police officer.
During that crackdown, which was supervised by a 16-year-old, not 16-year-old, by a 16-year San Diego Police Department veteran, Lieutenant Carl Black, Donna claimed that she and Larry had sex three or four times that summer because Larry promised to go easier on her if she complied with him. And so Donna, feeling like she can trust someone with that sort of authority, she believed that Larry would protect her.
Yeah.
But it also turns out that during that crackdown, Donna got close to Larry's superior, which was that Lieutenant Carl Black.
Ooh.
She said that Carl treated her kindly, more like a friend rather than a prostitute. Mm-hmm. According to her, he assured her that he'd watch out for her. And he said he's seen something in her and he wanted to help her get out of like working the streets. Like, I read these articles where it said that he would pay for like her medical bills, like one time he paid to get her out, like he paid her bail to get her out of jail, like he would help her out with rent. So wow. It's just like, you know, did he really care for her like that? Or I don't know.
Sugar daddy?
Yeah, that's what it seemed like to me. She was very beautiful. If you look at photos of her, she was.
How do you spell her last name?
Gentile. Gentile. She's so pretty. But anyways, Donna, she was invited by Lieutenant Carl and two other San Diego police sergeants on a four-day trip to the Colorado River. Actually, I forgot to mention, Carl, he had a girlfriend. Or maybe it was a wife, I'm not sure. But anyhow, Carl's partner went on that trip to the Colorado River. And Donna mentioned that there were some people on the trip there that didn't know that, you know, she was a prostitute. She said they went water skiing and that they just had a really good time. Soon after returning from that Colorado River trip, Donna ran into Officer Larry again. And he was at a laundromat on El Cajon Boulevard doing his laundry. And she told him, you know, about her recent outing with Lieutenant Carl and the other two police officers. Which I have to say, I kind of started feeling like, why was Larry doing his laundry there on El Cajon Boulevard? Maybe he lived by there, but I don't know. It seemed to me like, just watch. As I say more, I feel like he ended up like having, like falling in love with her. Not love, because if it's love, you don't treat someone that way. But I don't know, having this weird obsession.
He was like wanting to like be with her and stuff, and like kind of hoping that she's, he knew that she was around El Cajon Boulevard, so he would like always stick around there maybe.
I think so. So he, you know, when she tells him like, hey, I just came back from this trip with Lieutenant Carl, Larry got pissed. He got so pissed that she hung out with Lieutenant Carl. Also because of him, remember when he got caught at King Taco with Donna, remember he got that warning. He got written up or whatever. So anyways, here was a superior of his, and he's doing what Officer Larry was doing, and he got in trouble with for associating with a prostitute. So Donna asked him at that time if he could write a letter to the judge asking for a lighter sentencing, because remember, she was waiting trial for that one conviction.
Yeah, and he promised that he was going to help her out.
Yeah, so he told her, like, you know, yeah, I'll write you the letter. So he writes her a letter. But Larry, I should mention, he never reported to like his other superiors of what Donna told him, because according to him, he decided to conduct his own investigation into Carl and the other San Diego police officers. But of course, but over the course of around 2 months, Larry started to become almost obsessed with Donna. He started to harass her, and in August, Donna went to Larry's supervisor, Sergeant Harold, and she told him that Larry was harassing her for sex. She said that whenever he refused or she refused to have sex with him, he threatened to report Lieutenant Carl for spending time with her at the Colorado River. So he would be like, God, okay, if you don't have sex with me, I'm going to tell them about you hanging out with Officer Carl or Lieutenant Carl.
Oh my God, what a little bitch. Mm-hmm. He's like, why are you hanging out with him? I want you to be with me, but you're a prostitute and I'm a cop and I can't be with you, but I'm in there.
Yeah. And it was hard for Donna because she really liked Carl because he, you know, all the things that he was doing
nice
for her.
To her. Yeah.
Yeah. And she was concerned about Carl's career because she didn't want to see him lose it all because of her. So Sergeant Harold took Donna's allegations to his superiors and they began an internal affairs investigation into Larry. And then they also approached Donna and they asked her if she would like to be an informant, to which she agreed to.
Nice.
As an informant, she would have to wear a wire during meetings with law enforcement members. And in exchange, they promised to help her with her pending appeal on that one prostitution conviction. Mm-hmm. So they started to investigate both Larry and Carl. And due to the investigation's findings, both Larry and Carl, they were fired.
Both of them?
Both of them. Well, watch. So, okay, first, Larry got fired because Donna accused him of having sex with her and paying her money. And then he also would, you know, spill the beans about where the vice officers were during that crackdown.
Mm-hmm.
So she also brought up about how Larry wrote that letter to the judge and asking, you know, the judge for a break on her July 1984 prostitution rep that she had. Donna claimed that the day Larry wrote her that letter, he handed her $50 and then he tried to have sex. But she shut him down that day. And apparently after that, and then knowing about she's hanging out with Carl, that's when all of the harassment started.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. Now, Larry's side of the story, he swears up and down it's all a lie. He says he was just trying to earn Donna's trust to gather dirt on Carl. Sure, he admits to writing that letter, but he's adamant that there was no sex, like, ever, and no cash outs, and definitely no leaking of cops' secrets.
Oh my God, what a little liar.
Mm-hmm. So when the department found out about Carl's trip to Colorado River, they questioned him, to which he admitted was true, and they put him on a 10-day suspension.
Dang.
But then they find out that he'd signed Donna's bail bond one of the times that she was arrested. And then he also tried to pull strings with the probation department to lighten her sentence for that prostitution charge from 1984. He ended up appealing them letting him go to police Bill Colander, who did eventually end up bringing him back on the force, but he was demoted to sergeant.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, first he was fired. First it was 10-day probation. Then they found out all the other shit, fired, but then he appealed it, brought back, demoted. Okay. Meanwhile, Donna's appeal for her prostitution charge, it got denied. And in March 1985, she was sentenced to 90 days in Las Colinas Women's Detention Center. And during that time while in jail, Donna also accused seven other San Diego cops of harassing her, and she gave their names and everything.
Damn, she's like, well, I'm in here for 90 days. Might as well spill the beans.
Hell yeah. And honestly, good for her, you know, yeah, good for her. Because I'm sure like a lot of other sex workers this happened to, they just stayed hush about it, probably scared.
Well,
and
yeah,
they felt like no one's going to believe you.
Of course, yeah, they're scared to admit what happened and what could happen to them if they ever said anything, but, yeah.
So she would, she talked about how they would follow her, and they would even follow her all the way to her apartment. They found any excuse to hassle her. She ended up with almost 20 citations. Some were handed out just hours apart. It was all for like for stupid shit, like flicking cigarettes or parking too close to the curb. They even went as far as using timers to clock how long she stopped at stop signs. And if she missed the mark by a millisecond, they would ticket her.
What the fuck? So petty.
So fucking petty. And it didn't stop at the tickets. Some of these cops went as far as making threats to her, and it had Donna's friends seriously worried for her safety.
Yeah.
So she's sentenced to those 90 days, which she ends up serving 53 of those days. She gets out, and it's time for Larry's civil service hearing. Donna does take the stand, and there is some new footage of that on YouTube. And she starts giving info on her relationships with both Larry and Carl. And she says that she never had sex with Carl. She only had sex with Larry. But Larry and his supervisor both called Donna a liar. They said that she was a troublemaker and she was just a cop hater.
Oh, I was going to ask about that, if Carl ever actually slept with her or not. He never. She said that he didn't?
She said that he didn't.
Oh, okay.
And it was decided that Larry would remain fired, but he wasn't going to face any criminal charges and he wasn't going to be punished for the alleged sexual misconduct.
Okay.
Then next was Carl's hearing, and that was actually set for 2 weeks later, to which Donna was supposed to stand witness, but sadly, she never made it to his hearing.
Oh, no.
On June 23rd, 1985, a man walking his dog discovered Donna's deceased body along a dirt turnout on Sunrise Highway about 40 miles east of San Diego in Mount Laguna.
Oh my gosh.
Her body was partially hidden under brush and tree branches. She was nude. Her undergarments had been cut off meticulously, as well as her dress, and placed on top of her nude body. She had been brutally beaten and strangled, and there was also gravel that was forced down into her throat.
What? Gravel yes. inside of her? Oh my God.
Stuffed. What the Sadly, it was actually found out that the gravel was aspirated, meaning that Donna was still alive and breathing when the gravel was shoved down her throat.
Oh my God, that's fucking awful. What the hell?
Her official cause of death was manual strangulation and airway obstruction by foreign material. She was only 22 years old.
Oh my God. Damn. What the hell?
Larry.
So, sip.
Like, who the hell else would do this? Any old Larry.
Since Donna's body was found outside of San Diego, the sheriff's department took over the investigation, and homicide detective Thomas Streed was assigned lead detective. He immediately found Donna's murder scene odd compared to other typical cases involving prostitutes. So usually killers who aim at murdering prostitutes, they act out their sexual fantasy. They'll take some sort of souvenir and they pose the body in a special way to send a message to the public. Mm-hmm. But Donna's case was very different to him. Her body was slightly hidden, and the tire tracks at the scene, they were wiped away like someone was trying to hide evidence. Mm-hmm. So there was an indication of what's known as brush out, which means that the perpetrator had used brush or bushes and whatever plant life is around the area to essentially get rid of any shoe impressions or tire impressions around the scene.
Yeah.
And Streed figured that Donna's killer wasn't your typical predator. It seemed more like a planned murder with someone smart enough to cover their tracks.
Yeah.
And, you know, right away before I read everything to find out, like before I finished all of my research, Arena, when I read the part about the gravel being shoved down her throat, I took it. I was like, fuck, like somebody was trying to keep her quiet. That's a sign to like just shut up and keep quiet. That's how I took it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's crazy though. Like, I don't think I've ever heard of that.
I haven't. Using gravel.
Like, what the fuck? Not like a sock or a, you know, like some type of cloth or anything, or like a gag, like,
just right.
like a piece of cloth tied around. Like, that's crazy. I can't. Ugh. She poor thing suffered so much.
Mm-hmm. So the day after Donna's body was found, Streed was approached by a San Diego police officer named Bob Candland. Now, Bob asked Streed if he knew who they had back there, referring to Donna's body. And Streed's like, yeah, her name is Donna. And then Bob ended up warning Streed, saying, no, you don't understand what I mean. You're in serious trouble. This could be the end of your career. Meaning Streed's career, at least this is the way that Streed said that he took it, okay? He thought that this conversation was a hint that Donna's murder investigation would be politically charged, especially within the San Diego Police Department.
Oh, he was like, you got to be careful. This is obviously someone who knew something about investigations and how to cover their tracks. Yes. That's so scary.
It is. And, you know, so Bob actually turned out he knew Donna. He was a part of that summer 84 crackdown, and he was one of the officers that cited Donna for ordinance violations. And actually later, he found himself in her harassment claim. Like, remember she gave those 7 other names while she was in Las Colinas? He was one of the names of the officers that she said was harassing him.
Oh, okay.
With that, Bob knew Lieutenant Carl, too, supervised that crackdown. Mm-hmm. So he knew a lot about Donna and everything that was going on.
Okay.
And Bob was right. Donna's case was not easy because according to Street, something's in my throat, sorry. Just about every time that he contacted the San Diego Police Department for records or information, he was ignored. And they finally told him to take his request to Internal Affairs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they just were not being helpful at all. And it sucks because he goes to Internal Affairs, but there was a problem with him trying to get them to help because Internal Affairs was now under the command of Sergeant Harold Gudarzi, who happened to be a former boss and close friend of Larry.
Oh, God. Oh, no. So much corruption.
He was actually Larry's supervisor who publicly disrespected Donna just a week before her death at that hearing. Remember, he was part, like when Larry, it said Larry and his supervisor were calling Donna a liar, saying she's you know, a troublemaker. He was one of the people saying that about Donna.
Great.
So he's not going to help.
Yeah.
He was just about as useful as the local police department, which was pretty much not useful at all. They flat out refused to hand over Donna's arrest reports or any information about her regular clients. And whenever Street tried to reach out to officers, they got quiet, claiming that their bosses, okay, ordered them to keep quiet under all circumstances. This is just so fucked up. Imagine this is one of your family members, friends, somebody that you love. It's so fucked up. So
that whole like we protect our own thing is so fucked up because especially with police is like, no, you're supposed to protect the public. Like, what are you doing? Right. Like, just because you're a fuckhead doesn't mean you gotta ruin someone's life and their family members wondering what the hell is going on with Donna.
Yeah. So the few who did talk, they basically did it. Like on the down low, they arranged these secret meetings by phone to avoid tipping off any other officers listening in on their radios. But unfortunately, there was like nothing much came from it. Now, there was a witness who approached Street, and she was a prostitute, and she told Street that she had overheard two men plotting Donna's murder. According to her, a man in what looked like an unmarked police car, he picked her up on El Cajon Boulevard, and he took her to a motel where he paid her for sex. As they were going to start having sex, of course, he took his clothes off, and that's when she noticed that he placed a police badge and his belt on the nightstand.
Ooh.
So she took note of that. They have sex. When they're done, she's laying in bed, and she's watching TV. While she's watching TV, that man, he made some phone calls. Soon after, some other man, he showed up to that motel room, and the two men had a private, quiet conversation. A witness overheard bits of their talk, and she said she was certain that they were planning to kill a prostitute and make it look like a sex date gone wrong. That's what she heard them saying. We're going to kill her. Make it look like it was a sex date gone wrong. So she started to freak the fuck out thinking, fuck, they're going to kill me. But then she heard them mention the victim's name, which was Donna.
Oh, not my hers. God.
So Street showed her several, like, those police yearbooks, you know, to ID the two men that she met with. And, you know, he's flipping through the pages, asking her if she recognized any of the men. And when they got to Lieutenant Carl, she recognized his ass as the second man that showed up to the motel room.
Carl?
Yes.
He was the nice guy.
The nice one. Right. When I read that, I was like, wait, what the fuck, Carl? I liked you. Like, so disappointing. Just so disappointing. She trusted Carl so much. So, so she identified the second man as Lieutenant Carl Black. And then the man who she had sex with was Robert Hannibal, which was a former San Diego intelligence officer that was fired 2 years prior for involvement with prostitution.
Oh my God. All these cops are just hooking up with all these sex workers and getting them killed. Wait, so Larry wasn't involved yet? Or.
Well, Street, he wasted no time. And so he calls Carl and he asked him to take a polygraph. So Carl's like, yeah, I'll take it. I'm not scared. I'm not guilty over here. But before, so he goes to the place, and just before the test was going to start, Carl got up, he left the room, and he never returned.
Oh no.
Street never accused any specific San Diego police officer of Donna's murder, but he did emphasize that this case was anything but your typical prostitute murder. It was very different. In Donna's case, it seemed like she was already deceased when her dress was removed, suggesting that the motive wasn't sexual and the scene was staged to look that way.
Ooh, dang.
Now, Street kept thinking about how the tire tracks and the footprints were wiped away. While there were vague outlines suggesting, where the vehicle had been, there were no clear tracks. It appeared that the perpetrators drove back to that road after dumping the body, and then they returned on foot to erase the prints and tracks, covering their steps with branches and leaves and any brush, that they could find lying around. Now, this level of detail indicated the killer knew exactly what detectives would be looking for. During their investigation, the detectives came across several documents indicating that Donna had a feeling like she knew that her life was in danger. Among these was a handwritten letter that she sent to her cousin when she was in Las Colinas. She said, and I quote, I reported the patrolman for sexually harassing me. My life is in danger when I get out. The cops are waiting for me. She said her, or I'm sorry, also her brother, he came forward with written correspondence, from the same time period from Donna. And she expressed this fear over, speaking out against the San Diego PD. And one letter she pleaded to stay in jail after her sentence because she was so scared of getting harmed by them and lurking officers, the moment she stepped out. For me, the biggest thing is Donna's attorney that she ended up hiring, Douglas Holbrook. He revealed that a few weeks before her death, Donna handed him an audio cassette tape, and she told him to play it for the media if anything happened to her. When played, Donna's voice warned of her impending murder. She said, and quote, in case I disappear somewhere or I go missing, I want my lawyer to give this out to the press. I have no intention of disappearing or going out of town without letting my lawyer know first. Because of the publicity that I have given a police scandal, this is the reason why I'm making this. I feel someone in a uniform with a badge can still be a serious criminal. This is the only life insurance that I have.
Damn, that was so smart of her to do. She was
It
speaking from
was.
beyond the grave. She was trying to save her ass, like trying to find the help him find the killer.
Yes.
Dang. Oh my gosh.
Once, and then there was an overlooked detail. It seemed insignificant at the time, but there was a piece of paper found in Donna's belongings at the murder scene. And scribbled on it was a phone number belonging to a woman named Cynthia Marie. She was known as Cindy. She shared like a similar lifestyle to Donna. She was a prostitute. She grew up with, not easy, a hard childhood, and she found herself in a toxic relationship with a guy named Steve. This guy, Steve, turned out to be a drug addict, and eventually Steve got Cindy into the drugs as well. And he pushed her into sex work to support their drug habit. They even had a son together, but despite being a mom, she was just trapped in this terrible cycle of drug use. But eventually, there was a point where she moved in with her mom to try to rebuild her life. In July 1984, Cindy was arrested for suspicion of being under the influence by an officer named John Fung. And faced with the possibility of jail time, she flipped. She became an informant on drug dealers. So same thing like Donna. They offered her to be a drug an informant. And so she would wear a wire for these drug buys. Around that same time, Cindy stopped using drugs. And it was so cute because, like, you can read, there's some of her journals that you can find online, the things that she wrote. And she would proudly record her clean days in a journal. And when Cindy learned of Donna's murder a month later, she was devastated. Over the following month, her relationship with Officer Fung deepened. Cindy, with a background of respect for law enforcement, she saw something special in Fung. She introduced him to her family, and she believed that the bond that she had with that officer was something special, similar to Donna. Cindy's journal chronicled like their relationship, and she celebrated their anniversary, and she also detailed their intimate moments. She gave credit to Officer Fung, saying that he inspired her to stay clean. In September, Cindy was sentenced to jail for a check fraud scheme. In November, detectives investigating police misconduct, they approached her with a deal. Testify against corrupt officers and you'll get to go home early to your son. So she agreed. She provided names and details, just like Donna did, and she was released 2 months ahead of schedule. However, Cindy began fearing retaliation from the officers that she exposed. On February 21st, 1985, Cindy disappeared after leaving her son with her mom. 5 days later, she was reported missing, but the police showed little to no interest at all. Cindy's family searched for her, finding her car 6 weeks later in a restaurant parking lot. Despite pleas, the police refused to investigate further, dismissing Cindy as just another prostitute. Like Donna, Cindy's disappearance was not typical of the area's prostitute murders, indicating that the killer knows how to cover their tracks.
Oh my God, the same way?
Yes.
Same.
Cindy's mom, Linda, she finally realized, like, you know what, they're never going to see her daughter as worth their efforts. Donna and Cindy's murders remain unsolved to this day, fueling suspicions that San Diego police officers were involved.
Wait, what? They never caught who did it or ever did anything about it?
No. And you know what is so, okay, so this officer.
Oh my God.
Karina, this officer Larry,
yeah,
the fucker, he's so dirty and gross. So what pissed me off is 34 years later, after this all happened, he wrote a book called Who Killed Donna Gentile, the real story.
What?
In Larry's book. Okay, and he made money off of it. It pisses me off. Like, I found his LinkedIn, and he was talking about how he's this true crime author. Pissed me the fuck off. So in Larry's book, he says that the person he believes to have murdered Donna is a man named Ronald Porter. Now, Ronald, he is a convicted murderer and serial rapist. So Ronald would drive on the I-8 freeway and he would find female hitchhikers, not prostitutes, hitchhikers. Uh-huh. He'd offer them a ride and he would do like the sleeper chokehold from behind on them. Mm-hmm. Do that until they pass out. He'd rape them and then he'd throw their bodies off to the side of the road. But, you know, I should have looked in him more, but he didn't murder them all. He was convicted of a murder. I don't remember who or what. But anyways, the victims typically usually would wake up and get help. Like most of them didn't die.
Oh, okay.
So that got me kind of like looking more, and I was like looking at other police interviews who were involved in the Donna Gentile case. Nobody ever believed that it was this Ronald man. But yeah, this fucker Larry goes and writes this book, and to this day he wow. denies everything. And then I did watch, there was, I think it came out in 2019, there was a CBS 8 News interview with Detective Street. And to this day, he still believes that police officers are the ones to have murdered Donna. He doesn't know exactly which officer it was, but he believes it was a police officer. He says, and this is quote, "She was on the payroll for the Internal Affairs Division of the San Diego Police Department, informing them of police officers. She was targeted." Damn. I mean, come on, like, she was going to blow the lid off of
yeah.
the department's several sex scandals involving sex workers and on-duty police officers.
That is crazy. Damn, I really thought they were going to, like, do something about it, or, like, because she pointed out who... Yeah, she recognized Carl, especially. And then Larry had motive. Like, what the hell? That's so fucked up.
Yeah, it's crazy because then, like, last night I was having trouble sleeping and I was thinking of this case and I was like, fuck, like, I really thought it was going to be Larry. I did yeah. not think, like, it was Carl. And then, you know, he left the room when he was going to do the lie detector test. But, you know, we know, like, you know, those are not, it's, you can't rely on those, right? Like,
yeah.
And maybe he walked out because he was thinking, like, fuck, like, I don't want this to pin me for anything that I didn't do. I don't know. It's just really hard for me to, like, think it was Carl. I feel like it was that fucker Larry.
I mean, maybe it was, like, all three
of them.
Maybe
it was multiple. Maybe it was yeah, Larry, I mean, and Carl.
I mean, it looks sounded like half the damn police department was sleeping with sex workers anyway. And if their names were being called out, they were probably like, yeah, let's get rid of them.
Yeah.
Like, we can do it. We can cover our tracks. Like, we can protect our own. So.
So there's like this whole wiki page on the San Diego serial murders. And it was like murders that were going on. Several yeah. prostitutes at this time. Donna Gentile is one of them. And then Cindy was one of them. But yeah, it was just like, it's crazy. It's so sad. And when I was reading about Cindy's writing and her journal about where she was tracking her clean days, it just made me feel so sad for her because she was so proud of herself. And
it was like trying to turn her life around. Yeah. She was trying to do better for herself and her kids and stuff.
Yeah. And both her and Donna had dreams of doing something more. And yeah. tragically, their lives were ended like way too soon.
Do you know how old Cindy was?
Gosh, I don't know, to be honest.
Oh, okay. Because Donna was only, what, 22, you said?
22. Damn,
that's so messed up.
Yeah.
God. Oh, damn, no. I didn't know this was going to be unsolved, Renette.
I know. Those are the rough ones. And who knows, like, with genetic genealogy, because, okay, I should say they did find semen and saliva, you know, in her mouth and in her vagina, but she was also a prostitute. So, yeah. you know, from what I read, because I was thinking, well, fuck, did they collect, like, to see who was, did it belong yeah. to Officer Carl?
They got rid of all that stuff.
But they didn't have it. They didn't collect anything because they were like, oh, she's a prostitute.
Yeah, well, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Damn, that's so fucked up. Oh my God.
It is. It's so fucked up. It's so sad. But may Donna and Cindy rest in peace. Yeah. You know,
and all those sex workers out there that this has happened to, because this happens, I mean, we all know, this has happened so much over the years and is still happening now.
Yeah, when I drive to work, my usual way I go is I take the 805 to the 5 and then get off on 6th Avenue. But sometimes, like, if there's so much traffic on that 54, I'll take a different way. And mm-hmm. there's a spot in National City close to downtown. And I do see, like, every single time I go through there, there's, like, 3 young sex workers there. Oh, mm-hmm. man. And I just feel, like, so bad, like, pulling over and being, like, hey, girls, like, please be careful. I mean, I'm sure they know to be careful, but
yeah.
Just scary. Yeah.
That is scary. Dang.
And it's some bullshit when people with that sort of authority take advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Anna was so trusting of these officers. She thought that they were going to protect her and keep her safe.
Yeah. And she believed them when they were like, we'll help you, you know, we're going to be nice to you and this and that. Mm-hmm. And probably like promising, you know, to get her out of that lifestyle and stuff. But
yeah. And also, like, she wasn't like the typical prostitute. Like, she actually had her own apartment. She had mm-hmm. a car, you know, and she was still occasionally, I read towards the end, she was still working security guard. Like the graveyard shift, she was doing that like part time. And it was actually her landlord who hadn't seen her, I think he said, in almost a week. And so he had called the police or something like that to report it. And then that it was when the man walking the dog over there, you know, in Pine Valley found her. But anyways, that was a sad case on Donna Gentile Arena.
Wow. Well, thank you, Renette. That was crazy and sucks that it wasn't solved. But yeah, like you said, hopefully sometime soon they'll open it back up. But who knows? Maybe.
I know.
It's hard to think that they would.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And I know we've been having such big gaps lately because of things going on in both of our lives, just being busy. But for the next case, I truly do have it almost done. It's also, oh no, it's not. It's a Los Angeles case. But anyhow, it's almost done. And hopefully we can record maybe next weekend, maybe Sunday, possibly when I get back from Florida.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. And I do have two topics of cases that I've kind of done research on, but I haven't, like, put it all together. I haven't had any time. But I do want to do a case soon, too, so that we could have more coming out.
Okay, sounds good.
But, yeah, well, thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.